Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Bone of the Mo Thugs movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in the world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. we got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though, what do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. You know, tonight's show is really humbling for me, you know, because I'm an aspect of the inner workings of the sport, as most of you know. But the camaraderie, the love, the brotherhood, you know, I don't really get to share that aspect of it much. And this professor, I got to tell you, he's probably one of the coolest professors you're ever going to meet. I mean, he'll give you the back, the shirt off his back, but not only that, he'll tell a joke with you, he'll razz with you. He'll truly enlighten your day, and that's one of the main reasons why I wanted to bring him on tonight's show, because he's truly changed my life, and hopefully after tonight's interview, he'll change yours. I apologize for my voice crackling. I'm still a little bit fresh off of surgery, but with that being said, I want to welcome a good friend, Professor Jake Fox, to the program. Professor Fox, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing, Don?
Oh, I'm doing all right. I'm not nervous like you.
Well, I am, and thank you for the kind words, man. It really does mean a lot, and, you know, we've gotten to know each other over the last few years, and it's always good when I get to catch up with you in southwest Missouri, seeing my boys out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, my job as a journalist is kind of dig up a little bit. You know, I don't write down a question, because then the show becomes scripted, but there's a little aspect that I don't think too many people know about, and I kind of want to start the show off that way. You know, tell me about your little brief onslaught in WCW.
Back in my early, I'd already done some jujitsu, so I'd say it's my white belt days. I was kind of like a lot of my young guys in the gym, start and stop, because being broke and, you know, respecting my coach. And so I didn't want to try to like snake him and train for free. But I decided to try my hand at pro wrestling, and I put some money together for that. And went down to South Texas and started training at the Texas Wrestling Academy. And coincidentally got like an opportunity to be on an episode of Monday Night Raw with the WWE, and just in a little televised spot, got the crap kicked out of me by Eric Bischoff, and got to meet Stone Cold, and got a nice 15 seconds of fame.
You know, the part that I love about it the most was your walkout song. You know, I got to admit, I chuckled when I saw the walkout song, because it's Baby Got Back, you know, and it reminds me of who you are today, the professor, the aspect, the fun side of who you are. You know, when you look at the artistry of jiu-jitsu, everything is pretty much stringent across the board. As you know, I've had some of the greatest professors in the world on my show, and I love that aspect of the artistry, but I also love what you bring to it. You know, the humility, the camaraderie, the charisma, the realism of who Jake Fox is, not just as a professor, but as a man. What inspired you, you know, back in the day to take this path, you know, into jiu-jitsu, and what was it that kept you there?
Well, I think like a lot of guys of a certain generation, you see that early UFC, and you see Hoist out there, and he's doing his thing against guys a lot bigger than him, and I think, you know, especially kind of growing up with the Karate Kid era, you like that sort of thing, and you know, and the generation before that was Bruce Lee and Kung Fu movies, and you know, it's kind of evolved since then, but you see that old UFC, and you see Hoist, you know, kind of wowing everybody, being up bigger guys, and you start want to check it out, and you know, like a lot of kids in America, I'd done a little bit of karate, a little bit of judo growing up, but I just wasn't really sold on it. And then, you know, I started seeking out like more exotic martial arts, you know, trying to find out what works. And I kind of fell into some Muay Thai in high school, and I really dug that, but just, you know, being in the Midwest, it didn't really stick around. That coach moved on to, you know, greener pastures. And so then I stumbled across my first jiu-jitsu coach, and that was just after high school and back in 1999. And it was definitely eye-opening. And then, like I was telling you before with the pro wrestling thing, you know, I kind of just trained and took some time off, trained, took some time off. Like a lot of guys, you know, just 2 months here, then a month off, and 2 months here, then 3 months off. And when I came back from wrestling, I just kind of like decided to delve in and commit myself to jiu-jitsu. And it was like a lot of guys that probably have similar stories in the Midwest. There wasn't a ton of experienced guys. There's certainly at you know, back then there weren't any black belts in Kansas. My original coach, my first mentor, was a blue belt, and he was blowing us away with the stuff he was getting from VHS tapes and magazines and books. And we were just drilling at his little school, and it just kind of continued to grow. The whole scene didn't really blow up until the mid 2000s. And especially here in Wichita, we got our first, jiu-jitsu black belt, and so, you know, it kind of like was the springboard for a lot of people here in town to kind of like see the explosion here in Kansas, at least in Wichita, Kansas. You know, there's solid guys in various parts of the Midwest. You know, I look at, you know, my friends in Joplin, they have several black belts now in that area. That's really cool to see, especially if, you know, it's a little bit smaller metro area. There's a ton of black belts now in the Wichita metro area. There's a ton of black belts now in Kansas alone. But, you know, you go back, you know, 15 or so years, you'd have one. And, you know, in Kansas City, you might have like one. And so, I mean, this is one of those things that it's cool to be able to see this evolution. Personally, my style has just evolved from kind of like falling into having to teach as a blue belt, and realizing I didn't really know shit, and I knew enough of fundamentals, and I knew to kind of keep my eyes open. I'd cross train with wrestlers and, you know, try to pick up as much grappling as I could in other places. But, you know, it just all kind of came from a base of just, you know, trying to treat people with respect and kindness. And, you know, that doesn't really, you know, cost you anything except, you know, just a few kind words to people. And, you know, you treat people like that and they're more receptive to like share what knowledge they may have. And so I've been just fortunate to like run into a lot of good people over the years. And if you treat them with just a little bit of dignity, that goes really far. I mean, this kindness is currency that people just don't really get sometimes.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, the other night I was sitting on the phone with Relson Gracie from Brazil, you know, 78 years old. And, you know, he calls me all the time, which is kind of weird. But, you know, to sit back and hear the stories and to understand where jiu-jitsu comes from, it's profound to me because, to be honest with you, when I first started shooting it, I couldn't stand the shit. I mean, I really couldn't. You know, I thought it was a boring sport. And then I got my opportunity to get my first role under J.W. Wright. And, you know, of course he choked me out, but, yeah. You know, he made a statement to me that day that forever changed my life. He said, never in a million years did I think a photographer could learn as much about jiu-jitsu through a lens comparative to being on the mat. You know, I've shot a few of your seminars. We'll quite a few of them actually, you know, and I ask questions. I'm probably one of the only photographers. I mean, I'm sure the people that hire me probably go, damn it, Don, shut up. But, you know, I'm very inquisitive, and I like to ask questions. You know, the last seminar you had, I asked you a couple questions. You know, what is it about sharing knowledge with others that you feel defines Jake Fox?
So a good thing you kind of brought up. One thing that helps, I think, that's unique to you is you do have a martial arts background, man. And so when you are shooting that stuff, you are more receptive. It's like I bust balls on a couple of my ex-wrestlers that are, you know, jiu-jitsu converts, and they ask really good questions because they're thinking from a wrestler's perspective. Your background is striking, so you're thinking, you know, you still have a martial arts perspective, and so you're trying to understand it. And so, like, when you ask those questions, I always kind of like it because it may be something unique that that maybe I just haven't addressed, or maybe I haven't, you know, maybe somebody else has the same question and you ask it, and it's not silly at all. It's just nice to have like a different perspective on what you're seeing. Furthermore, like, you know, to address something else you said, you're talking about the kind of boring aspect of jiu-jitsu. You're right. You're not wrong in that. I mean, visually, if you don't know what's going on jiu-jitsu, it's boring, you know, and that's one of the things that you see, like, with the evolution of some of the no-gi pro show styles, you know, the combat jiu-jitsu and stuff like that. They're trying to make it more visually appealing, and certainly, like, no-gi jiu-jitsu is faster paced. There's a lot more going on, but if you're not in the know, it's kind of boring. That's why I think a lot of people enjoy watching striking arts, is because even as you know, someone that is unfamiliar with it, you can still understand people punching and kicking each other. I mean, that's an easy concept to grasp, but there's a lot of little intricacies that are going on in a grappling match. So I actually think you're right with that. You know, sharing knowledge is just something, you know, I always kind of joke about when I do Instagram posts and stuff, trying to promote my academy, you know, I always kind of joke about being a mediocre black belt, you know, adequate at best and stuff like that. Don't get me wrong. You know, I feel like I'm a qualified black belt, certainly, but you know, the aspiration is to be a world champion. You know, that was something that, you know, trying to do in my 20s, you know, I'm 40 now. Now I'm just trying to like teach the best possible jiu-jitsu as possible, try to bring up guys that, you know, have that same kind of concept of having, you know, the best possible jiu-jitsu as possible. It doesn't necessarily mean world champion status. Doesn't necessarily mean MMA champion status. It doesn't mean, you know, streets Billy Badass status. It's just, you know, like understanding how to be as efficient as possible, how to be able to be technical, you know, how to be fit, how to be like, you know, mentally healthy from, you know, the benefits you get from jiu-jitsu. It's sharing that is probably the greatest thing about it. You know, we were talking before we started the air, you know, I put in a lot of long days and I gripe about it sometimes because it's exhausting, but at the same time, man, I'm so fortunate to have my job that I wouldn't trade for anything in the world. You know, for me to be the release for people after having a rough day at work, and they come in and I can crack a couple of jokes and show them some different, you know, chokes and submission stuff, for them to be able to go home and be at peace, that's kind of icing on the cake for me. It's like, yeah, it sucks, you know, 15-hour days, terrible for anybody, but I got a cool job, and so I'm not going to, like, surely look at that gift and be like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, well, I totally get it. And, you know, to my listeners, you know, you might say, you know, or have a certain thought, but I'll take a step back before even Professor Fox was even thinking about jiu-jitsu. You know, back in the day, there was a gentleman by the name of John Velasco Owano. You know, it was before jiu-jitsu was even here. Him and a couple of buddies went to go visit Vitor Belfort in Brazil, and just so happened they were staying with him, and there was a couple guys going to this thing, and they asked, what are you going to? And they said, we're going to a jiu-jitsu tournament. And so they went, and they fell in love with it. You know, Joe Rogan, John Velasquano, and a couple other people, Justin McCauley. And so they go to this thing, they love it, they come back to the United States, and they want more of it. You know, they'd never seen this before. All they'd seen was the no-holds-bar shit, and, you know, this was new. So they called, you know, Vitor Belfort, said, what would it take for us to get, you know, somebody to come over here and show a seminar or whatever? So, well, we can send a couple purple belts, but, you know, you got to pay their airfare and feed them and whatever. They said, deal. So they came over here, and they showed it, and it kind of took off. And Carlson Gracie Sr., 2 or 3 months later, opened his first academy on the West Coast, and John Velasquano was the first black belt under Carlson Gracie Sr. in the United States. But the funny thing about it is, still to this day, even though he's a fifth-degree black belt, John Velasquano never competed. Not once. Never competed on the mat. But you know what? To become a black belt, it doesn't take you competing. It takes knowledge. It takes your willingness to learn. You know, how has the artistry defined you in that aspect? Because sharing knowledge is one thing, but doing it with purity, as John Velasquano has, how has that interpreted and created that aspect in Professor Jake Fox?
So, you know, being in Kansas, there's, unlike the coast, there just was never, and there still isn't like a ton of opportunity. We have Fuji coming through, and American Grappling Federation. So we have some regional major tournaments coming through a couple times a year. But there's the opportunity to compete pretty slim. And I remember I was still a white belt, probably about like 04. But Rafael Lovato Sr. would twice a year offer a jiu-jitsu tournament down in Oklahoma City. And that's only about 3 hours for us. And so that was kind of our only opportunity to compete. And so, you know, a couple of us would always go down and make the trip, and it was a really cool opportunity, but it was always tough to be doing something you're really into, really passionate about, and not having a ton of opportunity to compete. And so then, you know, MMA was still kind of Wild West type stuff. You know, athletic commissions were damn near non-existent. You'd have guys fighting two different weight classes just because they kind of looked the same size. Rule systems that weren't probably the most on the up and up, stuff like that. And you know, the only reason I ever did MMA was not because I wanted to fight. It's because I wanted to compete. And it was an opportunity to compete because those jiu-jitsu competitions are so rare. And so as I get older, I still enjoy competing. But, you know, man, it's not as much a priority as it was at like 23, 24 years old that it is now. You know, now I got a kid. You know, I've got an academy full of people that that really just enjoy their presence. So, you know, having to do the selfish thing to train to compete and having to, like, do what I prefer to do, which would be to teach and train with them, it's kind of, for me, it's kind of easy. Like, I'd much rather hang out and teach them jiu-jitsu and, you know, give them my time in that regard. And, you know, maybe if I hop into a tournament a couple times a year, it's just because I enjoy competing. But I'm not going to sit there and drive home like some hard training camp for something that I'm just kind of doing. You know, even we joke about it, like jiu-jitsu is kind of an expensive hobby. You know, like, I, you know, in regard to teaching it, I do it professionally. But at the end of the day, like, I'm not trying to go out there and be such a high-level competitor that's how I'm making my living. I'd much rather just, you know, run honest jiu-jitsu, teach honest jiu-jitsu, and just have, like, awesome people on the mat. And not just awesome in the sense of, like, they do good jiu-jitsu, but, like, also that the jiu-jitsu reflects, like, how they live their life. So, you know, I've had some stories that, you know, and some really, I don't want to share because some of them are really private stories, but how them stepping in the gym really saved some lives. And, you know, in some cases, the most literal sense. And to me, that's better than any medal I could win. And, you know, and it's just because they meet awesome people because of the gym, because of jiu-jitsu.
You know, I, even though I've interviewed, God, everybody from Tom DeBlas to Machado to everybody, Felicia O, everybody, you know, this question has always intrigued me because here you are in the middle of Kansas. How does Jake Fox define the lineage that he was to follow?
So there, and he still trains a little bit off and on. He's older now, and I haven't touched base with him in probably 8 months to a year. But my original coach is still around, John Castillo. Like I said, he was a guy who is out there doing it. You know, he's the first guy in Wichita really kind of doing it, had a school. Back then, everything was like a little bit on the grimy side. His first school was pretty nice. It was a little strip mall. And then, you know, it's not like the business that and established like martial art that it is today. I mean, it's still a little bit underground. And then, you know, we were in warehouses, we're in garages, we're in, you know, just a bunch of different like environments that was just, we're just grateful to have a space with mats. And, you know, sometimes there are shared spaces with other martial arts places. And just, you know, sometimes they're basically like just a shed with mats. And you were just grateful to train. Now it's a little bit more established. Like I said, when I was fighting MMA, I kind of fell into a teaching role at an MMA gym. Really good Muay Thai instructor. That's kind of like why I'd switched and left training under Johnny was because I was just looking for opportunity to compete. So I started training some Muay Thai and fell into a teaching role for grappling and kind of realized that, you know, I had a good grasp of some basics. Never, you know, made a promise to myself, never teach something I didn't know. Because, you know, when you start kind of lying like that, people see through it. They can smell BS. So I just teach, like, really fundamental jiu-jitsu, you know, run into wrestlers, guys I'm still friends with to this day. And I'll pick up some wrestling along the way. And probably 2007, maybe. I think about 2007, 2006, somewhere in there. My wife's in the military, and we were in South Texas, back in San Antonio, this time not for pro wrestling. But we were down there for her. She was at a medical conference for the Army. And well, we were, you know, kind of broke married couple, first together, those type of things. She'd have to go to conference meetings of the day, and we'd go hang out someplace at night. So we were just kind of paying my way to go have a little mini vacation together. And so while she was doing her work stuff, I just usually go pack a gi and go train somewhere. And I shot out a couple emails to some places down there. And one place responded back to me. And there's a black belt there that was teaching, and he'd only been in the U.S. for about 6 months. And his name's Andre Monchiero, and we just hit it off. You know, I was a blue belt back then, and I've been training for, you know, off and on since 99, pretty solid few years, about 3-ish years, just like, you know, pretty hardcore, had a few fights under my belt. And he was building a new academy down there, and it was all white belts, and I got to roll with him, and I was just really kind to his guys. I didn't try to smash any of his guys, just kept, you know, honest rolls and rolled honest with him. And, you know, he choked me unconscious the first time we rolled. It was awesome. We've been friends ever since. And, you know, and it was just one of those things. He asked who I was under. I told him I wasn't really under anybody. And he's been my coach, my mentor, my friend ever since then. And, you know, I've got my purple, my brown, my black belt under him, and continue to, you know, call my friend and coach to this day.
That's tremendous, because he just doesn't hand out belts. And, you know, he's probably the only professor in the artistry that still competes in the kids edition. I'm just joking, Professor Montero. you know, the first time I met him, you know, I was it kind of took me back a little bit because he's not the biggest guy in the room, but he's probably one of the heaviest little guys I've ever seen on the mat. You know?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I love the guy to death. I mean, he's a tremendous professor, and I can see where you two would correlate it. You know, Professor, think about, you know, deep back in the back of your head and your heart, you walk into the gym in the morning. Nobody else is there. And you turn the lights on and you go about your routine. And you just have that one brief moment that you step on the mat and you get a reflection into the life of Professor Jake Fox. What do you see?
The best part of my day is, again, you know, seeing how this impacts people. I recently made a change I'm trying to balance my commitment to my team and my gym with the commitment to my family. And my boy is 5 now, almost 6, and he's a trooper. He's been in the gym since he was 6 weeks old. Once my wife was done with maternity leave, she's back to work for the Army. And so he was in the gym, and he's been raised there. And so now he's getting older. He's starting to want to do things. So I'm trying to balance that dad time. And so my passion is for teaching beginners more than anything, because like once you get that like advanced blue, purple belt level, you're starting to kind of figure things out for yourself, and you still need guidance. And that's where I kind of start leaning more to the other black belts, because I don't want them just to do everything like understand jiu-jitsu how just I understand. I want them to understand it in their own way. And so the start of this year, which isn't very long ago, I started leaning on the other black belts to start showing stuff. And we don't really have an advanced class. We have an all-levels class. We have fundamentals class. And the beginners come to fundamentals, and I can focus on you know, instilling them, like, sound basic technique, but hopefully try to inspire them to become passionate about jiu-jitsu like I am. And then by the time they get to that blue belt level and they want to start doing some of the all-level stuff, it's great because they have something where they can go hang in that class. And then being able to see those advanced guys kind of develop their own personality on the mat, their own, you know, identity. And so to me, like, when I step on that mat, it's just, you know, how am I going to share what I care about? I mean, I've been doing this for, like, you know, about 20 years now, and that's a long time for anything, and certainly not planning on it to be my career when I started it, but, you know, good luck and good fortune has kind of brought me here, and so that's why I always try to, you know, respect my students and respect the people coming through the doors and the parents that bring their kids and the spouses that put up with their loved ones being away and, you know, committing time to hang out with me and my knucklehead band of guys. So it's, again, it's just one of those things that, you know, just a lot of appreciation, man. I'm just grateful to be able to be in this position.
Yeah. And see, you thought you weren't adequate enough to come on my show. Adequate at best. You know, in return, it's totally a 360, because there's three key elements about Professor Jake Fox: humility, integrity, and the willingness to give knowledge and share that knowledge and watch others grow. And that right there, my friend, is what life is truly about, not just as a professor, but as a man in your walk. You know, how tremendous has this been? I mean, I believe your wife is a world kettlebell champion. You know, your family is deeply divulged in the sport of jiu-jitsu and other aspects. How has this, you know, created the aspect at home? Would you say that it's defined your family more through the sport and helped, you know, create a relationship that's going to last a lifetime?
Yeah, I mean, just for you, Don, since you want deep, dark secrets, I remember this, and I'm sure there's guys if they've done the sport long enough, they've had some pretty bad injuries. And I remember, it's been well over 10 years at this point, but I tore my ACL, not from jiu-jitsu. I've never been severely injured doing jiu-jitsu, ironically. It's always been like playing real sports, like, you know, softball, basketball, soccer, stuff like that. But I blew my knee out and tore my ACL and a couple other things pretty bad some time ago. And my wife was telling me when I was in recovery coming out from anesthesia, she said I was crying like a little bitch. And I said, what was I crying about? Because I didn't believe her because she cracks jokes like I do. And I was like, what was I crying about? And she's like, you were crying that you would never go do jiu-jitsu again because of this knee injury. And I was just thinking, I'm like, no, you're making that up. She's like, no, I wish I would have had it on film because you were ridiculous. And I started thinking about, because I was at a crossroads in my life at that point with between my education at the university and a couple other things and, you know, trying to figure out where jiu-jitsu was taking me in regards to everything. And that really kind of hit home for me. So when I look at like where we're at now, because we've been together for 13 years, that it's just, it is something that has defined, you know, an aspect of our relationship. I wouldn't say it's the other woman by any means, because she's as committed to the gym in other regards, like you said, with the kettlebell sport, which she's kind of found her own identity with that. We met initially at the MMA gym, and, you know, I mean, if it wasn't for all that, you know, her doing some kickboxing back then, you know, who knows where life would be, but, you know, she's always been into fitness and doing her things with our academy, especially on the fitness side of what we do. So, you know, the gym really is like our second home. We put in more hours there than we're in our actual home. So, yeah, like, you know, the jiu-jitsu and stuff and what we do, being active, it's a big part of our identity. It's not our, you know, entirely it, but it's a big part of it.
Yeah. You know, in the artistry of jiu-jitsu, you can win worlds, you can win pants, you can win multiple awards. And I like to use a reference from Kung Lee, you know, never look back or never look at everything that you've accrued because it'll hinder your future. And I think that's what I love most about you is you're Jake Fox every day of the week, you know. And you're also Professor Jake Fox every day of the week. And I think that's what has brought me close to you and one of the reasons why I wanted you on the show. But I want to ask you a question that I asked Tom DeBlas. And it kind of took him back a moment, and then he went and he did a post about it. Because I think the sport truly needs to know this. You know, first and foremost, you know, I asked him, you know, even though you're a black belt, do you see yourself in your heart as a white belt? You know, so I'm going to pose the same question to you. Even though you're a black belt, do you still consider yourself a white belt at heart?
Yeah, because so you have to look at it because it again, I can see why he's taking it back. It's a pretty deep question. Like, the black belt represents a degree of mastery, okay? And, you know, you get when you get to that black belt, I've heard so many other black belts I know say, like, man, you know, I get this thing, and all it really tells me is I have a really good understanding of the basics. And it helps you kind of keep that mentality, or hopefully it keeps that, you know, keep that mentality as you progress on and realize that the black belt's not the end, it's the beginning, you know, it's all that kind of cliche type black belt stuff. But you really start thinking about it, it's pretty true. And when you start applying the lessons that took you from white belt to black belt in jiu-jitsu and start applying them to life, you know, you really want to keep that white belt mentality, that hunger, that desire to want to understand not just jiu-jitsu, but other aspects of your life better. And, you know, that's where I've seen, again, some of these benefits with guys on my team where they come in a bad state and they don't know why they're there, but they're just, you know, maybe they heard something on Joe Rogan, or maybe they're, you know, they don't know why they're there. And they start doing this and they start, like, finding out more about themselves through that jiu-jitsu. And so even when they leave the gym, I've had a lot of guys train with me, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, and they never reach black belt status, at least not jiu-jitsu, but they find what they've been missing because they still have that white belt mentality, and they figure out, like, what it was that they came searching for when they first walked through the door. So, you know, that stuff is really important. I think, like, the understanding of having that mentality, you know, in other avenues in your life is important, you know. Certainly, like, this year has already been eye-opening for some other things I'm working on personally where, yeah, I've had to have a white belt mentality. And the progress towards that black belt, this part of my life, is going to take maybe even longer than it took me to get the black belt in jiu-jitsu. Or maybe another avenue might be a little bit faster. But, again, it's trying to reach that level of understanding that you get as a black belt in jiu-jitsu. So, you know, having that white belt mentality in other avenues, yeah, you know, that's just jiu-jitsu is just a small part of me, but it's also a big part of me. You know, it's what I do day in and day out. But, you know, like a lot of guys you probably talk to, they have other interests and they have other things they want to fix. But maybe they never would have got to that portion of, you know, understanding their own personality if it wasn't for jiu-jitsu.
You know, I completely agree. You know, I just got a couple more questions for you, Professor. I know you've been up since 4:30 in the morning. You know, the other day I had on my 500th episode a recurring guest, the creator of Nogi and jiu-jitsu, that being Professor Chris Brennan. You know, the no-gi aspect I truly love, but there's some aspects of the artistry that are now changing, like we talked about earlier, that are going to striking, that are going to different aspects. Do you see the jiu-jitsu that you fell in love changing, and do you ever think that the artistry itself will continue to maintain that base that it sprouted from?
So, I see that the jiu-jitsu is constantly evolving. You're seeing some amazing stuff. Again, like I would joke about, you know, I'm kind of a mediocre black belt, so I'm not huge on following flow or following all the tournament stuff. But, you know, I see highlights and I go find stuff on YouTube if I'm interested in, you know, if I have a question for myself, maybe it's something I'm working on or something I'm showing the guys, or I find a different take on something, and I'll go down a deep hole and just watch just a bunch of clips of different things and just be interested in stuff. There's so much now that there wasn't in the early 2000s, you know, when I really started getting full tilt into jiu-jitsu, and some of it's great and some of it's not. And a lot of it has to do with, like, the evolution of rules and the major tournaments. I think there's going to have to be some soul searching on, like, kind of figuring out. I certainly don't think there's going to be any sort of, like, split or anything like that in jiu-jitsu. But you're going to see schools that take, like, one more of one slant than another, you know. I definitely try to focus in the fundamentals class of teaching the martial art first so that there is still that fundamental concept of self-defense that, you know, is the original intent. And then, like, the all levels class definitely has a little bit more of sports slant. But I don't think that the two are independent of each other. I think they're quite intertwined, and you're certainly not going to see, you know, some of the stuff work, like, as far as, like, street application as well. But then other stuff is, you know, 100% self-defense, 100% sport aspect. So, you know, as far as that goes, again, you kind of take the good with the bad. Everybody's happy that the sport's grown and that the art's grown, but I definitely kind of view it sometimes when I'm teaching technique that, like, hey, this is not, you know, this may not be the greatest thing. You know, I try to, especially knowing it as a weakness, coming up like I have, that the takedowns of jiu-jitsu have really kind of taken a back seat. And you're starting to see that come around more and more, more guys emphasizing takedown stuff, having access to some really good wrestlers. I make sure that our kids' class does a lot of takedowns so that as they evolve into adults, they don't fall into the same pitfalls that I have having to train. And so, like, you know, there's these things that you just want to, like, you kind of see, like, well, I see it as a weakness. Maybe we should make that a strength. And so, you know, it just as you keep going forward, you just kind of have to figure out, you know, what you like, what you don't like, and, you know, how you want to play the game. I know some of the senior belts in my gym compete a lot, and they roll one style of hunt for submissions when they're just training for themselves, and they roll another style when they're getting ready for a big tournament where they're just trying to position play and score points. And I'll tell you, when they're trying to get me, it's a lot more fun than when they're just trying to camp out and, you know, score points.
Yeah. You know, my aspect and thought was on the old man jiu-jitsu style. You know, old man jiu-jitsu, I love it. I don't think there's much that compares with it. I'm not a fan of some of this new stuff, but I am a fan of the old man jits, you know. You know, there's a big push for the Gracies to move, and they're on the, you know, aspect of that now of bringing striking jiu-jitsu applications to the Midwest. I know this by speaking with the Gracie family. You know, they're on a major surge in creating that aspect, not only in the Midwest, but on the West and East Coast. What are your thoughts on the Gracies doing this pushing aspect towards the combative, you know, striking aspects of jiu-jitsu correlated to what you teach and what is commonly, you know, referenced to in our sport?
I'm kind of torn because having done some MMA, I still think, like, specifically, when I first started doing jiu-jitsu, we did have some striking type stuff in it. Because it was taught more from that kind of pure Gracie jiu-jitsu background of, you know, combat and self-defense. So I don't think the idea is foreign or silly, but when you start looking at some of the stuff with the combat jiu-jitsu and, you know, the grappling with slaps and stuff, when I see that, I think it's kind of cool because it's a different style of jiu-jitsu than, say, like, you know, a tournament style play. Because, I mean, it does change your style when there's the threat of getting slapped or punched or whatever. But on the same token, it's like, if you want to do slap jiu-jitsu, just do MMA. I mean, like, I know it's a little bit different than, you know, but if you're going to want to start talking strikes, then, you know, kind of train for some MMA. A lot of my guys in the gym that are truly interested in self-defense, you ask him, like, well, hey, you know, we have a really good kickboxing coach. You know, why don't you do some kickboxing too? Well, I don't want to get hit. Well, that's, if you ever have to use this for real, you're probably going to get hit. So, you know, if you do a little bit of kickboxing, a little bit of boxing, you're going to realize a couple of things. Just like, you know, when you first start doing jiu-jitsu, you get choked and kind of twisted up and stuff, that you're not fragile. Okay. I mean, the great paradox of the human body is, for as fragile as we are, when you look at the mechanisms that keep us going and keep us alive, we're quite durable. And, you know, you can do some of this stuff for a while. And so if you really are interested in self-defense, you know, you should do some kickboxing. So I think them introducing some stuff in that, it's not necessarily a bad idea, but at the same token, like, you know, I wouldn't say that they're even late to the game, but, you know, a lot of gyms have offerings of some sort of striking, especially if it's an MMA gym, even a pure jiu-jitsu gym usually has somebody doing some sort of boxing or kickboxing. You know, one of our satellite programs is at Taekwondo place. And, you know, I mean, if you wanted to learn a little bit of, you know, kick type striking, you know, there's good Taekwondo accessible, and, you know, especially with the jiu-jitsu we have. So, I mean, it's, I think it's overall necessary if you want to be kind of like a complete jiu-jitsu player to have at least an understanding of the striking game. But, you know, something specialized with like the Gracie logo on it, I don't know if that's necessary, but, you know, if they can do it, good for them. I mean, I know there's a lot of people that'd be interested in it. They're awesome at marketing.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. You know, you're my brother. I'm Fort Worth in life and transparent. You know, transparency is what I'm about. And I mean, that's kind of what they're correlating with me now. They would kind of like me to set up a place here in Missouri, you know, for them to open up and manage. And I don't, like I said, I don't know why they picked me to come to. You know, I just, I guess I happen to be the one that picked up the phone. But, you know, Professor, time and time again, after I've shot your seminars, you know, listening to the knowledge that you share with others, showing the, you know, the people that you truly care, because you do take the time in the seminars and in teaching to make sure that everybody understands the key aspects and elements of what you're showing them and the fundamentals. You know, I don't get to see that too much at seminars, you know, because a lot of professors aren't willing to take the time. But you are, you know, and with that being said, you truly have changed my life and the jiu-jitsu world, because I look forward to the seminars that I get to shoot of yours, and I look forward to the knowledge. You know, I've had ample opportunities from Rafael Lovato to you name it to shoot. But I look forward to shooting yours, because you're making a difference in an area where there truly isn't a market for what you do. You've correlated yourself with Mike and Mike up here in Web City, and you're sharing the knowledge across the board. And in my eyes, that makes you a tremendous man, because any man that's willing to share his knowledge is a blessed man. You know, I got one final question before I hand the mic to you. But when it's all said and done, Professor Fox, how would you like to most be remembered?
Man, I don't know. Not a dick. I mean,
man,
I don't even begin with. I know. That sounds silly, but like, man, I tell you, it's so weird. Man, I don't know. I guess just like, you know, that everybody just says, you know, especially like, not even regards to jiu-jitsu, just, you know, hey, he's a good guy. He's a kind guy. You know, stuff like that, that it's just, I mean, that's all I care about, you know, like, you know, I try to be a good dad. I try to be a good husband. You know, I try to be a good coach. You know, I try not to let anybody down and try to, you know, take care of a lot of people, and I wear a lot of hats, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I just want, you know, when people think about me, they don't have, you know, like, that guy's a real asshole. I know it sounds silly, but I mean, it's kind of that simple. It's just like the thing about being nice. It's not really that hard. You're either kind or you're not. And, you know, trust me, there's people that make me grumpy all the time. And, even then I try not to like, hold any grudges or be grumpy to them or whatever, but you know, you're human. So, you know, it's just in the end, I think a lot easier just to be nice to people than be rude. And even when people piss you off, you can be grumpy about it. But you know, the fact of the day is I'm not going to hold some grudge or be so pissy about somebody that I'm going to lose sleep over it. And so hopefully, you know, when my day comes and I'm out of this world, that when people talk about me, they have a laugh and they have a story of something fun, and not be like, man, that guy's a prick.
Oh yeah. I was so scared when I did that back picture of you with the back picture of Shrek. You know, I was like, he's gonna kick my ass all over the place.
No, that's the one thing. You know, we talked about that. That's something when you were leaning into that last question, man. You know, if anything, you know, you talk about these kind words you say about me. You know, one of the things that I enjoy about when I get to catch up with you, because I only get to see you a couple times a year, and it's always nice to talk to you, man. I want to know how you're doing, how your health is, and, you know, what you've been shooting lately. And, you know, I got you on social media. And again, I'm not the type of guy that listens to a bunch of podcasts and watch a bunch of YouTube stuff. You know, I'm usually just too busy trying to, like, not let the house burn down, you know, not let the gym burn down. Just trying to take care of my stuff. So when I get a chance to BS and catch up with you, you know, there's part of me now, like, because we have our little meme game where you shoot me and shoot one of my seminars, that, you know, hopefully I try to give you at least one opportunity to get a silly picture that you and I can both have a joke about, and that, you know, the mics can get in on the joke and the guys at the seminar can get in on the joke and just have a laugh at it, because, man, life's too short to be so serious all the time.
Amen. You know, it really is. You know, the thing I like to do on my show before I hand you the mic is give you an opportunity to thank those who have truly gave you that push when you needed that push, those words of enlightenment, the people that stood by you through thick and thin, the people that always have been there to encourage you. I like to give you an opportunity to say thank you to those people that have stood by Professor Fox throughout his lifetime. So now's your opportunity, Professor. You know, the ones that, you know, truly have instilled and helped create you. What words of thanks would you like to give to them?
Man, the list is forever huge. But, you know, a couple of notable ones, you know, like I was telling you, Johnny Castillo, my first jiu-jitsu coach, you know, really good guy. Did a lot for the sport here in Wichita. I think he gets passed over on a lot as far as, like, recognition and credit, because the guy was doing it before a lot of guys knew what was up with jiu-jitsu. Andy Zerger, he was my Muay Thai coach. He gave me the opportunity to start coaching at his MMA gym when I was still a blue belt, you know, and that was just a matter of happenstance. It worked out well for both of us. He's still doing his thing, work with MMA fighters. You know, Andre, you know, he's still my coach. He's been my coach for a long time. He's given me a lot of business advice. He has enough confidence in me to kind of keep an eye over the mics over in Webb City with the A-Force Missouri crew, you know, and I try to be a good example for them and answer any questions. You know, Big Mike's always like, hey, I don't mean to bother you. I'm like, brother, you can bother me whenever. You know, I'm trying to help you, man. You know, the guys are awesome. My wife has been with me forever. You know, we've been together for, like I said, 13 years. We've been doing this. She's seen me through a lot of ups and downs with the sport, with the art. You know, my parents, you know, God love them. My mom supports me. She totally gets it. But, you know, my in-laws, my hat's off to them. I got a special place in my heart for them, not just because, you know, I'm married to their daughter, but when we started this gym, you know, they backed us on helping us secure the funding to get started. And, that fear, you know, since they were co-signing on that loan for me, that fear of failure, you know, gets you right in the nuts, and you want to prove that you're going to make this work. And, you know, I got a lot of thanks to them for believing in me and believing in our dream. You know, now Kim and I have got this kick-ass family, you know, that I'm really close to, and it's, you know, almost 200 people, and man, I can't beat that, you know? So there's too many people. I got awesome coaches. I got awesome friends on and off the mat that just, you know, they make it well worth it, you know?
Yeah, they truly do. You know, just like, you know, that aspect that you've instilled in my life, you know, I look forward to those couple times a year too, bro. You know, I really do. When Mike hits me up and says, hey, Fox is coming, it wouldn't be the same without you there. Like, man, you already know.
Yeah, for
I'm
sure,
there.
Man.
You know, Professor, I told you, and it wasn't that hard of a show to do, was it?
No, oh, man. But, you know, but again, like you said, hey, we're just going to bullshit, brother. I was like, hey, it's one more opportunity for us to catch up, you know? And I really appreciate you asking me those questions. Some of them were, I had to take a second to think. I didn't want to give you too much dead air, but man, you know, you asked a couple of deep questions, man.
Well, I could have went deeper. You know, you're a virgin on my show, so I really didn't want to go too deep.
I appreciate you being
kind,
man.
Yeah, come on, man. I made Daniel Cormier cry, you know. So if anybody can make DC cry, you know, you must be good at what you do. Now, I got to pat myself on the back as a joke. But, you know, I created this show for people like you. You know, people that put a roof over my head, food in my stomach, and gave me an opportunity to do what I love to do. And it's people like you. I wouldn't exist if it wasn't for people like you. You know, and not only that, I got to meet a brother and a man that I consider a tremendous man in the sport and in your walk in life. I'm going to pass the mic over to you. Why don't you give my listeners a way that they could reach out to your school, or they can find you on social media, you know, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program before we let you go. The floor is yours, Professor.
Thanks again, Don. And again, you know, you asked me to be on this. I'm like, what's he want to talk to Hack Black Belt about? It's just one of those things that, you know, if you guys are listening to this show, I'm sure you're familiar with Don's photography. The dude knows what he's doing. It's cool to be able to see some of the stuff he's done in Invicta and some of the regional fight stuff and some of the national and international fight stuff. It's pretty awesome to be given this opportunity to talk to you, especially because, like, I didn't feel like I had much to talk about, but you asked good questions, man. If anybody out there is interested in what we do, you know, we're over at foxfitnessbjj.com. We're on social media. Again, we're in Kansas. If you're ever passing through, we have a really cool opportunity to come in, stop by, say hello, share the mats with us, share a laugh and a choke, and just come through. We have that happen from time to time because, you know, people are in town with the aircraft industry and they're looking for a place to train. If you're listening to this, you need a place to train, you're in town for work or something, hit us up.
Yeah, most definitely. And you might even get to smell the caveman. Oh, that guy's something
else. His daughter is killing it. His daughter's training at my buddy's gym, and she is killing it. She trained with me for a second. It was just a little bit of a hike for where he lives in town, and I was really kind of disappointed when he stopped her training. He got her in at my buddy's gym. It's closer to his house, and she is killing it in jiu-jitsu right now. I'm really proud to see her still doing her thing. So shout out to Dave's daughter, Alexis. She's going to be a monster. Maybe she'll follow in her daddy's footsteps.
Right. Hey, was that a joke before I let you go? Was that a joke the other day that he posted that after 10 and a half years in the sport, he never had a major injury, he lay down and cracked his neck in 8 places or some crap like that?
Man, I don't know. I know, like, he's made a couple of jokes about, you know, starting to feel age, starting to catch up to him. But I'm waiting. I know he's got some big things he's working on the horizon. I'm waiting to hear what he announces. But he's been working with some other friends of mine, and kind of excited to see where things go. And I've heard a ton of rumors, so I certainly don't want to be like out there trying to like throw more rumors out. But man, this dude, he's a hustler. Dave's a knucklehead. I remember he's still a high school kid. We first started training with Zerger, and you know, I thought for sure he'd either be dead or in jail by now, not some Bellator guy, like, you know, fighting, you know, longest win streak, you know, or not longest win streak, most wins in Bellator, you know, some insane number of fights. The dude just likes to scrap. And I'll tell you, he's trying to just ride out scrapping until he can't scrap anymore. And I'm excited to hear what he's got up his plate, man. You never know. He starts blowing up Bellator's social media when he's looking for a fight, and they usually find something for him because, you know, he comes to bang.
Yeah. You know, He'll probably drop that on my show, but you know, I'll tell you a quick story. I know, I've kept you longer than I should have, but he was on my show one time, and that night I was training a mutual host to do the show with me, and Dave goes, "Don, your mutual host sucks," and it kind of caught me wrong, and I said, "Like you did your last two fights, bro." I said, "You're going to be known for the greatest walkout ever," and I said, "And that's it." And he got quiet, and I was like, "Oh, shit, Don, what did you just do?" And he came back, and he goes, "You're right, bro." And, you know, like 2 weeks later, he fought, and I was down there at the fight with him. And I'm walking back to my car, and it's dark back there. And all of a sudden, I hear McGuire, and it's Rickles. And I go, "I'm going to get my ass kicked." And, you know, he came up, and he gave me a hug, and he kissed me on my forehead. And he said, "Thanks, bro." He said, "You know, you really, you know, kind of did it in a really weird way, but you kind of set me back on my path." And you know, that's the kind of guy Dave is. He's real. He's humble. And that's what I think I love about all you people down there from Kansas, is you truly wear the sport on your sleeve, but you truly do deserve all the credit that you get. Professor Fox, I'm truly proud of what you've accomplished in jiu-jitsu. Not necessarily the WCW. I'm giving you a bad time. But thank you for sharing an hour with me and my listeners. You truly aren't no old hack in the sport. You're truly one of the most idolized professors in my eyes and in my book for what you do, you know, because knowledge is the key to keeping the future going. And, sir, you truly are doing that. With that being said, I want to thank you for joining my program. I told you it wouldn't be that bad. I can't wait to get you on again, and we'll hack it up again, sir.
Thanks, Don. I appreciate it, man.
All right, brother. You get some sleep. I can't wait to the next. Hey, when is your next seminar anyway?
Man, I've been doing some stuff with the airbase out here. Doing some little mini camp type stuff for a family of deployed airmen. That's something actually Kim and I have been doing together, so that's kind of a cool deal. But I'm actually, me and my partner, Byron Jabara, we're going to be doing a seminar in Houston, I think like March 7th or 8th. I have to get the exact date, but we've got a seminar coming up in Houston. And then I'm sure I'll be back your way. I'll hit you up when that comes up, but probably sometime late spring with Professor Andre. So I'll let you know, man.
Sounds good. You have a good night, Professor. Thank you for sharing who you are.
All right,
with
take
my
care,
listeners.
Brother.
All right, brother. God bless. Peace.
All right, good night, man.
Good night. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Professor Jake Fox. Truly a tremendous man. I mean, we're brothers in life, so we kind of took tonight's show lighthearted. I went a little easy on him. Only a few deep questions. I could have went really deep on him and had him stuttering, but I don't want to do that to my brother on the first show. You know, I hope you enjoy the show with him. You know, he calls himself a hack, but he's truly not. He's truly a tremendous professor, and truly a tremendous aspect of knowledge and the artistry. With that being said, I want to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA with Juan Martinez, Cut Man for Hire with Jacob Stitch Duran and Juan Ramirez, the 86ers with Alfred and Freddy, and last but not least, Bite Me Mouth Guards, best in the business with Joe Rice. On that note, you have a good night, and God bless.
A whole lot of talk. I got that. sweetest. This sweet like soda pop. Get mad and then be